The single most important thing we can do to set ourselves up for long-term economic success is investing in education and job training. We still have over 100,000 Rhode Islanders that have high school degree and some college, but no college degree or no job certificate. We need to reach out to those folks and help them get better skills so they can get better jobs. That takes time. You know, we need to kind of retool the way we teach students in high school so that if you don't want to go to college, you can get out of high school and get a decent job. And some of the investments we're making are once-in-a-generation investments. Roadworks, $5 billion. That's a once-in-a-generation investment. Next year, I am going to propose a big investment to rebuild our schools. That's a once-in-a-generation investment.
Is the state moving with enough urgency and enough seeking change dramatically enough on the economy and public education?
I think we can always do more. We've done a lot. We have done an awful lot. In the past few years, we've brought about all-day kindergarten for everyone, tripled the number of public preschool rooms, became the fourth state in the country to provide tuition-free job training in our community college. But look, we're not where I want us to be. I want every high school student to graduate ready for college or ready for a career. And we got a ways away to go from there. I want every third grader reading at grade level at the end of third grade. We're at less than half. I'm proud of the work we've done, and we have to keep up the pace. 98% of Rhode Islanders have health insurance. People are working. People are making more money. Kids are going to CCRI tuition-free and coming out and getting jobs. 20 companies have moved here.
Will the budget that you'll be rolling out in January include a proposed expansion of your so-called free tuition program?
We're still putting the budget together. It's a tough year due to the deficit. The Promise program is working. It's working incredibly well. We've seen a 43% increase in the number of students going to the community college. And I've talked to so many of these students. They work full-time, they go to school full-time, and they tell me they couldn't be there if it weren't for this. I'm going to continue that program. It's unlikely that I would expand it at this point. I say we keep it going. And if it continues to work as well as it is, assuming I'm still the governor, and a few years from now, I probably would say let's expand it. But I don't plan to do any expansion next year.
2017 has been marked by a cultural reckoning about sexual harassment. You've told us previously that you have not experienced sexual harassment, but I wonder if you have witnessed sexism in politics or in your previous career as a venture capitalist, and what your reflections are on this kind of moment that we're going through culturally in coming to terms with some of this.
Yes, I mean, look, you see it every day. It's not unusual for women to be dismissed, condescended to, and I think what you're seeing from women all over the country is they're saying enough is enough. That is very different, though, from sexual harassment, and also what you're seeing is these deeply disturbing accounts of women being harassed, you know, physically. And the message on that is we need to have zero tolerance. Everybody, man or woman, deserves to go to work and not be fearful that they will be harassed because of who they are. I was with a group of high school students the other day. I was talking to the high school students, and one of the girls raised her hand, and she said, it's just not fair that we would be paid less or treated differently because we're girls, because we can't change that. We were born that way. I don't know how old she was, 14, 15, 16 years old, and she's exactly right, and I think that's how women feel, which is, this is who we are. Respect us for who we are and value us for what we can contribute.
Couple of questions on politics. Has there ever been a point since you got into politics where you thought about not seeking re-election?
Not particularly, no. I mean, look, I feel that we're in like the fourth or fifth inning of an economic comeback. I know you like baseball. So I want to finish the job. You know, we've done a lot, but there's an awful lot left to do. And I look at it through the lens of progress. We're on a journey. You know, we're on a journey to a place of making Rhode Island stronger and better for everybody. And I want the chance to finish the job.
There's been some speculation about you in the past about possibly being a presidential candidate at some point in the future. I suspect if I ask you about that, you'll say you're not thinking about that right now. But would you rule out the possibility of running for president in 2020?
Yes, I would rule that out. I also would not have gone to work in Hillary's cabinet had she won and asked me. I would not run for the Senate if Jack Reed or whoever decided not to run. I can unequivocally say that. I've got the job I want. I'd like to keep the job for a few more years because I think we're on a good path, and I'd like the chance to continue leading Rhode Island and getting us to a better place.
In terms of the opioid crisis, were the goals set by your administration about reducing opioid deaths too ambitious?
Maybe they were, though I felt it was important to set an ambitious goal to our discussion earlier about urgency. I have found as a leader, sometimes if you set an ambitious goal, people run faster to get there. This is another thing where we work so hard at it and it feels like we're barely making headway. I'd like to start spending more time on prevention, spending time now thinking about how we can do a better job of prevention, and also breaking down the stigma related to mental illness and addiction. Addiction is a disease. It's not something wrong with you. It's not because you're weak. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's a disease. We have to treat it like that, help folks get into treatment, and stay at it. Last thing I'll say is, as it relates to the goals, the ground has shifted on us since I set those goals as it relates to fentanyl. So even in the past 6 or 9 months, the amount of fentanyl that we see in Rhode Island is through the roof. It's increased. Fentanyl kills people on a single usage. So anyway, so I set the goals, and it's like, it's a shifting landscape.
How close is the state to offering treatment on demand?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think close. I mean, that's a complex question. So I'd say we're almost there. We've improved substantially. However, one thing we have not done, and I think we're far from it, or we have work to do, is getting insurance companies to not deny people for the length of care that they need. So that if you need medical-assisted treatment, you can get it. We've trained a lot more doctors. I'm feeling reasonably good about where we are. We have more beds available for people who need it. Still more work to do. The problem is, if you go someplace and you have coverage for a few days, and then you're sober and you're put back on the street, you're just going to relapse. And we need to do a much better job, and I need to work with insurance companies to fix this. So we're not close on that. How long will it take? I don't know, but I do know it's a big problem.
Governor Gina Raimondo, thank you for sitting down with us.
Thank you.